It's Success Happens on 930 WFMD, a discussion with leaders who share their pathways to success. Success Happens with your host, Jen Charlton.
Good morning and welcome, everyone, to Success Happens. Wonderful to be here today. And as always, we're looking at where I think there are opportunities to improve the quality of life for people. And, you know, in some instances, people have suffered some stuff, right? They've gone through some things. Life happens. And it can get in the way of success for people. And I want to talk today about a very tough subject. It's topical. It's personal. And it is about this the sexual harassment and sexual assault that's going on. Well, it's been going on for ages, right? Since man was man and woman was woman, probably. But what we're finding now is there's becoming finally an intolerance, finally an opportunity, a space, if you will, for people to speak up and to say, you know what? I experienced that. Me too. Right? And that whole Me Too movement. Now, I do want to be sensitive to the men listening, because it's primarily a male-female issue. And know that there are some really great guys out there. You've never done such things, and you never would. And we honor you, and there is no issue, right? And this whole dynamic really around the whole dating thing, you know, how do you, you know, two people are attracted to one another. Sometimes you meet in the workplace. How does that work? You know, so it's complicated, but we're going to tackle it today with Dr. Greg Powell with Powell Management Resources. He also has a practice here in the Frederick, Mid-Maryland area. And I thought it was an opportunity for us to talk about how do we navigate these dynamics in a responsible way. So that's maybe the end goal of the conversation. But there's a lot of yuck to get through to get to that. So good morning, Greg, and welcome to the show.
Good morning.
So, you know, we were talking, you know, offline about, you know, there's so many different directions we could go with this conversation. And obviously, psychology is complicated. But if we start with the premise that in most instances, not all, because there are some people who are gay, and that's fine, no issue there. However, for most people, it's a male-female relationship. And for most people, somehow you have to decide you like somebody, and somehow they have to give you the cues they do, and somehow you got to start that process called courtship. And it's not simple. And it's gotten a lot more complicated, I think, in the fact that if you're in a work environment and you're single, let's leave the married folks out of this for the moment. That's a whole nother kettle of fish.
Sure.
But
is.
Right. So, but if you're single, how do you navigate this whole, you know, meeting somebody in the workplace in an appropriate way? And I think it's maybe dividing the lines between, and you're going to tell me if I'm right or wrong here, dividing the lines between that and something called somebody being a sexual predator. Mm-hmm. So this is the show today, and we're going to try and cover a lot in an hour. So let's get to it. So first of all, Greg, help us understand your background as the context for this conversation as far as the work you do with corporations.
Sure. I'd be happy to. But I want to bookmark that term that you use, sexual predator, because there In the world of dealing with sexual harassment, that is just one type of sexual harassment where you have a sexual predator, but there are many others, and some more innocent than that. So,
The global conversation is sexual harassment.
Right.
Within that,
there can be predators.
Got that.
But not everybody who harasses another person sexually is necessarily a predator.
Okay.
We can talk about some of the distinctions.
Very good. Okay.
I'm a psychologist, and I have two specialties. I'm an organizational psychologist and a clinical psychologist. So I have a practice working with businesses and other organizations on the people side of their business, how people lead, how people manage, how people plan, how people resolve conflict in the workplace. And then I'm also, as I said, a clinical psychologist. So my practice is working with adults where I do a lot of marital therapy and family therapy and working on mood issues as well as the stress issues that arise personally from the workplace.
Very good. So when we talk about corporation, because we're going to kind of focus in on, let's say, organizational, because it could be within a nonprofit or it could be in a church.
It could be anywhere.
It could be anywhere. Anywhere there's an organization of people that rely on one another and, frankly, have to have trust. See, I think what really gets breached here is trust.
Yes.
And so in a work environment, we expect – I'll speak for myself. Mm-hmm. As a woman, I expect to be able to go into a work environment in a safe environment where I'm not going to be accosted.
Yes.
Now, it's happened.
Mm-hmm.
We'll talk about that. It's definitely happened. But for the most part, I go in with the ideology that this is a workplace and I'll be safe.
Mm-hmm.
But once that is breached, there's something that must occur, I would think. And oftentimes as women, we don't say anything.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we might say, oh, it's no big deal. He just, you know, did whatever. And, you know, we kind of blow it off.
Yes.
And I think society wants us to kind of blow it off because we don't want to deal with it. It's a kind of a nasty thing. We don't want to deal with it. So we just blow it off. But there is recourse in, you know, certainly in an environment like I work in now in the government, you know, there's very serious protocols to follow. How do you approach this with businesses? And I would think large corporations are more apt to have those policies. Smaller businesses are less apt to have it. But maybe the culture is so strict that you would never do anything inappropriate because, you know, your boss is down the hall. So to help us understand the dynamics of that business environment and what do we do if it starts to occur? Let's start to unravel it.
Sure. Well, whether it's a large organization or a small organization, beyond college years, the place where most people meet their partners is at work. You know, we can't run counter to biology. You know, people who are single are very often looking for somebody to get to know better, to date, to possibly become a partner with. And where you spend most of your time is work. So it's very common for people to meet at work. That can be wonderful, and that can be problematic. The issues
for both the employee and the employer.
Oh, absolutely, both ways. And that's another avenue to discuss. But let me come back to the question of what arises. What's the dynamic? At work, we have a number of things going on that can be affected by sexual attraction. And the most important of them is the power differential that occurs at work. People at work are legitimately in a hierarchy. And I say legitimately because for an organization to operate, you have people who have higher levels of responsibility, more pay, more privileges. And then we have people who don't.
And I want to add,
yes,
and more power.
That's exactly where I'm headed with it.
Yeah.
They have more power and more responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have people who are, we'll say, you know, lower on the corporate ladder. Doesn't mean they're less important as people, but it means that they don't have the same power, influence, responsibility, and privileges. And so what happens very often in a workplace is that people can confuse their power because of their position in the organization with their power in terms of human rights and civil rights. In a workplace, as any other place in society, people have the same rights when it comes to how we are treated. So we have a right to being safe. We have a right to being treated respectfully. We have a right to not being compromised on the basis of our gender or the basis of our race or the basis of our religious beliefs. So when that confusion takes place, people use their power in order to gain an advantage over another person in the workplace. And when that occurs, that's sexual harassment. And it's a fairly common practice. And over time, what's happened is that our institutions have been changing. I think a great example is Dr. Nasser and the Olympic Committee, where the institution was designed around having a sexual – now, he was a sexual predator. This
Correct.
Is a systematic and illegal way of satisfying his sexual and power appetite. And the institution was designed to allow him to do that.
So, and the institution you're referring to is?
Is the – I forget the exact name of the Olympic the United States Olympic Committee.
Yeah.
The girls were required to see him. There was no one else in the room during the exams. He was not accountable to anybody. And when complaints came up, they were dismissed. So he basically was enabled, strongly enabled by the institution around him. Let's look at Congress, where there have been...
So before you go on,
yep.
I think we have to underline something here. The fact that these women were by themselves with this person,
mm-hmm.
is it a question? It's a rhetorical question to ponder, right?
Mm-hmm.
Were they there by themselves because policy allowed for it or required it?
Mm-hmm.
Or because he structured his world in such a way that that's what he required? I want to know the mm-hmm. answer to that, because I want to mm-hmm. know, did the Olympic Committee tolerate this? And that's a big question. And there mm-hmm. we're not to the bottom of this.
Mm-hmm.
And if you had the opportunity to see the speech, and it was a speech by
mm-hmm.
the judge,
mm-hmm.
everybody should Google the speech.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was Judge Andolino is the name. The judge gave a phenomenal dissertation
mm-hmm.
on the issue.
Yes.
And she said, finally, because it stops here, like at her bench. And the idea that people hadn't been looking, you know, that we turn a blind eye, that we, you know, want to dismiss something. That's the answer mm-hmm. that needs to be discussed and discovered.
Yes.
Because if we're really going to unravel this thing, no kidding, we have to know, did they know?
I can't say in the specific example of the Olympic Committee, but there's the Olympic Committee, there's Congress, which has had regulations in place for many years to protect people who are engaging in sexual harassment, the secrecy, the non-disclosure agreements, the payoffs.
Oh, in the case of congressional aides and things that have been...
Right. When a congressman would be inappropriate with a sexual... sexually inappropriate with an aide.
An underling or something, yeah.
We saw it at Penn State, though that was
horrific.
Horrific. And
horrific.
And so just across the board and in organizations. So bringing it back to your question of the workplace, we've had institutions that have developed over the course of many years that have been male dominated, and the power has constellated around the men, and so the institutions reflect that.
That's a great place to take a break, and we're going to come back and talk about that kind of power between the male-female dynamics in an organizational environment. You're listening to Success Happens. I have with me today Dr. Greg Powell. Welcome back to Success Happens. This is Jennifer Charlton, and I have with me today Dr. Greg Powell, and we're tackling a really tough subject, but an important one, and the timing couldn't, we had talked about having Greg on for a number of weeks, and then this thing with Dr. Nasser occurred, and so I really appreciate your insight on this really tough subject. So we were talking about this idea of power and control in the workplace, and that often it's a male domination kind of environment. I think that what I want to say as a woman is that we have to be not okay with the conditions that are presented to us and say so. And I going back to these women being alone in that room, how many women had talked to each other about it? Did anybody else know? Was it an individual phenomenon that 150 women never told anyone that they had been harassed by this man or assaulted? So at some point, finally, the Me Too movement occurs. What happens in Weinstein and, you know, New York and L.A. occurs. Finally, there's a media rise in visibility on the issue. And 150 women by one guy come out and say, you know what? Did they not know that each other were being assaulted? Is that possible that we were so silent as women that we didn't say anything?
Well, that goes straight to the power issue. If you were to speak up, and this is what the women, well, they were girls at the time.
Right.
Teenagers. They stood not to advance in the Olympic competition.
He could ruin their career.
He could ruin their career, absolutely. And that's where the power issue comes into play, not just with the Olympics, but in any organization. And as I was mentioning before the break, it's very clear that the institutions and organizations that have been in place over the last many hundreds of years have been largely put together by male leaders. And that's not an indictment of males. That's just the way it's been.
Mm-hmm.
And that's changing. And it's creating all kinds of daylight where there was no daylight before. So there was institutional support and enabling of people in power being able to be sexually inappropriate, and they weren't held accountable for it because they were the powers that be.
So I want to address something that's a slightly different scenario, but mm-hmm. the instance in Rockville High School mm-hmm. where a young man, 19, assaulted a 14-year-old, mm-hmm. and they tried to call it consensual. I've said for years, there's no way 14-year-old can possibly have equal say against a 19-year-old in a high school environment.
Well, let me just make one of those distinctions.
Yeah.
We talked about
yeah.
predator before. There also are legal distinctions versus, I will say, relationship distinctions. Because if you have a 19-year-old and a 14-year-old, then there is a legal line because the 19-year-old is an adult, the 14-year-old is a child. And typically there's about a 4-year difference that is considered as a legal guideline for and if he is over the age of 18, then he's an adult. So that becomes statutory rape. And that is even if there was consent with the 14-year-old. So that's another avenue which is different than, let's say, a man and a woman are interested in one another in the workplace. They have an attraction
right,
to
right,
one
right,
another.
Right.
Or let's
no
say
legal
he
boundary.
Has a – let's say, you know, it gets a little more gray when he has an attraction to her. She may or may not have an attraction to him. And let's say he's higher up in the organization.
In the food chain. Mm-hmm.
Higher up in the food chain. So it is not illegal or necessarily inappropriate for him to, in a respectful way, approach her to let her know that he's interested. Common sense tells us that it's done in a way that is not compromising to her, that doesn't affect her position in the job.
It's not physical.
It's not physical. He's not touching her. he's simply saying, hey, would you like to go out and have a cup of coffee, whatever. Now, if he's her boss, that's problematic. Again, it's not illegal, but it may not be it will certainly put her in a position that's difficult because she may feel like she has to comply.
Well, so, and companies, I think, guard against that, do they not,
yes,
with certain policies and practices that,
yes,
they put in place that say you're not allowed to, you know, date your subordinates.
Yes. But even with those policies in place, people date. There's biology. And sometimes and oftentimes
in the secret.
Well, yes, they'll do it discreetly and outside of the eye of other people. Sometimes they don't do it discreetly, and
it's awkward.
And what makes this such a gray area is that, you know, the woman, if she is lower on the food chain, as you put it, may be actually interested in dating her boss, and that may turn out to be a good relationship. So there's a lot of gray. It certainly is not appropriate in a workplace to have the boss dating somebody who he supervises, and most organizations will, if that starts to occur, make a structural change to where they're in different departments. But it isn't necessarily a bad thing. It could be a good thing for the two of them organizationally. They may have to make adjustments. But the issue is when you go down that road, it's a fine line for the woman. You know, whether she should comply with a request to date, you know, will that compromise her career if she doesn't? And in the past, a lot of women just went ahead and did it because they felt unempowered. Now we're reaching a point in our society where women are empowered, and it's not. I love the expression that women's rights are human rights. It's not a women's rights issue. It's a human right issue because it's about the power differential at work.
Yeah, and that's right. And it could be between two men, you know, not even a sexual thing. But yeah, so we're going to go to a break, but I just want to wrap up and say, you know, there have been times in my life where I've experienced, you know, I used to have my own business and I had wonderful clients and many of them were handsome and single, and I was single and I thought, but you know what? I cannot mess mm-hmm. with my income stream.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes. So that's probably pretty good policy if you're in business for yourself. Don't date your clients. It's just bad business.
Yes.
Anyway, we're at the bottom of the hour. We're going to listen to news and weather. You're listening to Success Happens. I'd like to thank our sponsors, Sweeties on the Creek and Xerox Complete Document Solutions, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Success Happens. I have with me today Dr. Greg Powell. And if you have an interest in calling and making a comment, you're welcome to do so at 301-694-WFMD, 301-694-9363. So we were chatting off air, and I thought this was really a great opportunity to share a different perspective. And you had mentioned you yourself had been in a situation where somebody in a position of power tried to inappropriately, you know.
Made an inappropriate advance.
Yeah, I'm trying to come up with a little.
Yes.
So maybe you would share because I think it gives some perspective.
Sure. You know, we were talking about how you can be in a position where you are one down in the power differential. And when I was 17, I was applying for early admission to the University of North Carolina. It was my top choice. And back in those days, when you applied for early admission, you had to have an interview. So I went down to Chapel Hill and was being interviewed by one of the admissions officers. And during the course of the interview, he very clearly came on to me. And I was put in a position of thinking, well, you know, I certainly don't want to become involved sexually with this man, but you know, I want to get into school here. So what do I do? He'd offered to have me spend the night at his home. He made really pretty clear overtures. And you know, I kind of walked the tightrope and worked my way out of the situation, and I did end up getting into the school. But I remember at the time feeling extremely uncomfortable and compromised, and I did not report him. I remember thinking, should I report him? And
of course, 1971,
right?
Different era, different time.
Different era.
Well, I appreciate you sharing that because I think that it's important to recognize that there are many different configurations of this issue. And, you know, for years, you know, I lived in L.A. I went out there and, you know, everybody knew about the quote unquote casting couch. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden we're, you know, shocked and amazed at this thing with Weinstein. Are you kidding me? I was there in 1987. It was well underway. So, you know, this idea that I'll give you what you want if you give me what I want.
Right.
And you don't get what you want if you don't give me what I want.
Right.
And so I have done what you did with that person at college. I've wiggled my way out of many a situation that mm-hmm. was incredibly awkward.
Yes. And I think for women, it's a lot more common than for men. And it really, when you just talk informally, if you ask the question to women that you know, a great many have a story like yours, Jennifer. And because, as I said, our institutions have been male-dominated. And I'm not male-bashing. I mean, 95% of men are not doing this sort of thing.
Right.
But nonetheless, the institutions have been built in such a way that men historically have been in a position of higher power, and they have protected that, not necessarily consciously, but the institution – sometimes consciously, but the institutions have protected – you know, people from
we were talking about Sandusky and the whole Penn State
right.
thing.
Right, but not just there. And people who are in powerful positions in any organization tend to have the means by which they can bury these stories, not create a scandal, not be compromised. And so it happens across the board. It's just higher profile and, of course, criminal with someone like Jerry Sandusky. But you can find it in, you know, many businesses where there are people in positions of power. It'll be interesting to see as women become more and more empowered, which I think is a great thing. We're achieving a very different balance now. You know, whether more situations arise when women are in positions of power.
Well, I was just thinking about Fatal Attraction and some of the movies that have come up where the woman's the head honcho and mm-hmm. the men have to succumb. But, you know, it's I think an opportunity for us to do a restart,
mm-hmm.
really. And, you know, what I'd like to talk about now is this has happened. It's happened for ages. And there are, let's talk men and women.
Okay.
So I'm not going to make it a gender thing. Mm-hmm. Who have been sexually assaulted, who have been sexually abused, who have suffered. They have PTSD, because mm-hmm. I know of several. And as a result, they have trouble functioning in a normal work environment.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking about a woman when I was volunteering in the detention center who was there on heroin charges. She was 23. And she wouldn't look me in the eye. She would not look me in the eye. For months, she wouldn't look me in the eye. And I knew this was a really troubled soul, you know, and she was delightful. And I looked at her and I asked her, I said, what was the thought in your head the first time you took heroin? She said, it's not worth it. I'm not worth it. She had such low self-esteem. Well, she had been sexually assaulted as a child, sexually abused, ongoingly. So here was a woman who was the fiber of her being was tattered. How do we empower people who have suffered these injustices to get their life back on track in a meaningful way so that they are not what happened to them?
Mm-hmm. Well, you talked about complexities. That's, you know, that's a complex issue. If we're talking about in the workplace, many organizations have employee assistance programs, EAPs, where if somebody is experiencing – well, let me back up. If somebody's experiencing difficulty, they can go there to try to get help. But if the issue is that they've had a difficult life, have experienced sexual abuse earlier in life, and then they get into the workplace and now they're facing sexual harassment in the workplace on top of sexual abuse earlier in life –
It's traumatic.
It's absolutely traumatic. And, you know, I would recommend that the person, if they're not already in therapy, work with a therapist on this. But there's a distinction between a person's personal recovery from difficulties like that and what happens in the workplace. In the workplace, there are, you know, there are a number of protections in place in a good organization so that if a person is being triggered, if their PTSD is being triggered by what's happening in the workplace, that can be addressed, that can be looked at.
Well, and I would think that the company has an obligation at that point. If this mm-hmm. person has suffered additional, you know, issues, that they would help provide therapy. Listen, finding people like you is not easy. Mm-hmm. There aren't enough people who can provide good therapeutic sessions, I think. Mm-hmm. It's a real gap, because when you see how many people out there who are on meds for, you know, psychological conditions, mm-hmm. some severe, some not severe, but, you know, maybe they've suffered this kind of an issue mm-hmm. and they're taking medications, or they should be. Mm-hmm. You know, how do we get people to help? Because I think at some point people feel hopeless.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, I want to make it clear that it is not a hopeless situation, that there is help. And depending upon whether you have insurance or don't have insurance, the affordability of it is, of course, an issue, but there is help. But I also want to distinguish the difference between sexual abuse and sexual harassment and normal, back and forth sexual interest, because, you know, at the one end, it's a crime, you know, when you have sexual predation or sexual abuse. At the other end, it's a matter of civility and treating people, you know, with dignity and human rights. It's not a crime to have an interest in a woman or a man. That's human nature. But how you handle that is the issue. And what's changed is in our society, and it's a big change, and it's been occurring over the last 20 years primarily, and now it's really, I think, reached a peak, is that men generally were in a position where they had more power, more influence, and so they merged that with the idea that they could also have sexual privileges, so to speak. And it compromised women who were unempowered and put them in a compromised position. And that's ending, hopefully.
Well, and I think it will also end with more women in higher positions of authority, to your point earlier. And I think, we as institutions, companies, organizations, society must have a balance mm-hmm. of men and women in leadership as long as they're competent.
You bet.
I'm a big believer. That's like, you key. Don't just put somebody in because, you know, so to speak, they wear a skirt. I can say that. You can't. But, because you want people to be good at what they do.
You bet.
And by the way, we as women don't want a gig that we're not good at. Mm-hmm. We want to be good at what we do. So we want you to hire us because we're really good. But so that's that point. So let's go back to this linkage I want to make, because I think that we're also seeing in the midst of this whole eruption of awareness around sexual harassment, abuse, all the different versions of it. There's also, coinciding with that, I think, this idea of people self-medicating mm-hmm. through various substances. Mm-hmm. Right. So now it's known as substance use disorder. Mm-hmm. It's not limited opioid. It is the thing that we're all looking at, because I think the number is last year 50,000 people died in U.S. of an opioid overdose. Mm-hmm. So it's a big deal. So but there's alcohol, and the effects of this on the unborn child is unbelievable. Substance exposed newborns. If you as listeners want to learn more about the impact of this, it's horrific what's going on for these little unborns, right? Mm-hmm. And as they come into this world, they come in with this burden. It breaks my heart. So we as a society have to start to deal with, there's this stuff that's been going on. people have PTSD or they have psychological impact or they have all these issues, and some of it may be chemical, some of it may be psychological, some of it may be both, and they're self-medicating or they're reaching for, you know, whatever they got to do to cope. So how do we now, here we are, how do we start to empower people to be bigger than that thing that's got a grip on them? Because right now they're dealing with it as a way to get through life.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've always had in society ways that people can get, I'll call it a quick fix, that if I'm feeling anxious, if I'm feeling depressed for whatever reason, how can I feel better? And in the past, it typically has been alcohol. So if you look historically at alcohol use in the United States, you go back to colonial times, there was an awful lot of what we would now call substance use disorder. It's not a new thing. It's just what there's some changes in what people have available to them and what they're using.
Well, and public perception of it, I think, too.
Yes. So, you know, now we have drugs that weren't available in the past and people are using them in order to feel better.
Yeah. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to Success Happens. I have with me Dr. Greg Powell. It's a great conversation about some really real issues that people are facing today. If you want to call in, you can call 301-694-9363. I'd like to thank our sponsors, Xerox Complete Document Solutions and Sweeties on the Creek, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Success Happens. This is Jennifer Charlton, and I have with me today Dr. Greg Powell, and we're tackling some really, I think, important issues, and we're talking off the break, you know, about this idea of the linkage between, you know, feeling better, you know, whatever our woes may be. And I will say this, I've always had a philosophy, excuse me, I have always said, I will never drink when I'm upset or angry. I just know not to do that. I mean, it's just bad policy, you know, because then you're only trying to mask something rather than deal with something. So I'm of the opinion that that's just not a good practice. Now, when you look at people, you know, I was sharing with Greg this morning before we started, I said, I stress eat. And I didn't know this about myself until, I don't know, 6 months. 9 months ago, I started to realize, oh my goodness, I stress eat. And so, and I've gone through some weight loss and I've lost, you know, some pounds, found them again, but a few. But at any rate, it's a struggle. And how we cope with angst, anxiety, stress, whatnot, others may smoke, you know, and I can see where that would be a really tough habit to break. So we're talking a little bit about this and we're going to do another show on it, right? Where we talk about that habit that we take on. That may help us cope. But do you have any thoughts about that? We're kind of digressing off the original point, which we knew we would, around the workplace and sexual assault. But I want to wrap this up around empowering people to be bigger than their circumstances and not using whatever it is they use to try and cope with it, but to reach out and get some real help. Sure. That's going to help to resolve it once and for all.
Sure. Well, we live in a complex time. I think our societal issues have multiplied. I wasn't around 200 years ago, but it looks to me from what I've seen like life was a little simpler. It's very complex now, and the stresses of modern life take their toll because with the complexities of work, of home, of money, people experience a great deal of stress. And when you're in a situation that makes it hard for you to be able to cope in a effective and realistic way with the stresses that are going on, sometimes people will turn to shortcuts. And as I mentioned earlier, that's not new, but we have many more shortcuts available to us than perhaps we did in the past. So, you know, whether it's drinking or smoking or drugs or eating or spending or sex, you name it, people can overdo it. And when they do that, they trade off instant relief from the stress for longer-term issues that make a complicated, stressful life even more complicated and stressful because now I have to work this habit, this bad habit that I've developed into the fabric of my life. So it's a little bit like scratching poison ivy, you know. It feels good when you do it, but it just spreads.
That's a good analogy. I want to say, as somebody who is a professional communicator, just talk to somebody. It's, you know, I don't care who you talk to. You know, call a, there are churches, synagogues, religious institutions. You don't even have to be a member. You can call them up and say, I need help. I don't go here, but can you help me? There are people who will willingly sit down with you, and you can bend their ear and give them what you've got that you're carrying around with you. And I just really think it's so important, if we've learned anything from this Dr. Nasser situation or Weinstein or, you know, Matt Lauer.
Yes.
You know, no comment. That, you know, if we've learned anything is say something.
Yes.
Get communication. You know, whether it's you're being assaulted and you need to communicate that so you put an end to it, or you've got a troubled heart from something that occurred to you in the past and you need to deal with that in a meaningful way without, you know, self-medicating.
Yes.
It just, let's get people in communication. And, you know, if you're somebody that could help lend an ear, then do so. Be that ear for somebody who needs that help. So I just want to make sure we start to open the dialogue.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, there also is the 211
I'm so glad you mentioned
line.
It's wonderful.
That is a fantastic resource. It's one number that you can call and have a trained individual on the other end of the line help you sort out what's going on and put you in touch with resources that can further help you. So I agree with you 100%, Jennifer. Opening up to someone, and it can be very hard to open up when you are ashamed of what you're doing, whether it's stress eating or whether it's drinking, the side of it, or whether it's the fact that you are in a sexually compromising situation at work. It can be hard to open up, but it's important to do that because that's the beginning of help.
Yeah, and I think just to wrap this up, because we're, believe it or not, that this hour has flown by, but I want to just mention that, you know, and Greg brought in the Washington Post, and you mentioned there's three articles in there just today.
On the first, well, three articles on just the first two pages.
About this issue.
Yes.
And so, thank God.
Not the issue of substance abuse, but the issue of sexual
harassment.
Yes.
Back to the point of the show, and that we start to really deal with, because the long-term impacts of this are enormous. They're enormous for families, not only the individuals who suffer these injustices, but the families and workplace environments get disrupted and things like that. And we've seen some of this in our local community as well. And I think it's incumbent on us to say enough is enough.
Yes.
And to not continue to reward bad behavior with additional leadership. It needs to stop.
And before we end, I want to be sure to put in a statement, because being a male, for any men that are listening, this whole hour may have felt like an indictment of the male gender, and it absolutely is not. I said earlier that the great majority of men are not engaged in sexual harassment of women. And just because there's an accusation of sexual inappropriateness or sexual harassment doesn't mean it's true. I believe, and research supports the notion that the great majority of the time it's true, but
right.
It's not always true. People being people, there can be, you know, revenge accusations and that sort of thing. So we don't want to rule that out. We want to have a common sense approach to this. But we also want to be sure that people who the majority of whom are women in the workplace, if they need to deal with this, it should be open for them to deal with it.
Very good. Now, Greg, before we break, I want to give people an opportunity. If you are a business and you are looking at how do you deal with this policy and practice in the workplace, how do they reach you?
My number is 301-620-1888, and my website is www.powmgmt.com.
Okay, so please reach out to Greg. He's a great resource for you if you would like to make sure that your work environment, organizational environment, is appropriate for all people to feel safe and included and appreciated and respected. And I think that we all seek that. So thank you so much for being with us today. You can listen to our podcast, and please share it with others. It's a great resource for companies to look at how to deal with this very important issue. And I thank you. We'll see you next Saturday. You've been listening to Success Happens, and I'd like to thank our sponsors, Xerox Complete Document Solutions and Sweeties on the Creek. We're scooping out. Have a great week.